If you have your journals for David, why don't you open those up? Let's take some notes. I was talking to my son the other day, and he said something that really kind of caught me off guard because, well, if you know my son, he's super kind, super gentle. He's got that personality profile that always wants to be a helper for other people, actually gets joy out of helping others. He's a pastor in Atlanta, father of three, husband of one. And in our conversation, he had just turned 41, and it's a season of life where you get more and more responsibility, right? And more people are looking to him for support and strength and counsel. And he said this, it kind of surprised me that he said it, that everybody wants something from me, but I don't know of anybody who wants something for me. Can you relate to that? Like, this is, for a lot of us, this is a recurring theme. We're giving, if you're a school teacher, like, you know, you feel this. Or if you're a business owner, you feel this. You're taking care of everybody on your staff, and you're providing wages for them. Or if you're a single mom, boy, do you feel this. Like, you're doing everything for these. And who's looking out for you? Who is waking up in the middle of the night worrying about your condition? Who is noticing the pain or struggle that you're having? We are in, and I'm thinking, why do so many people relate to this? Because we are in what psychologists call, and it's a good term, I think it's going to stick, a friendship recession. We used to have more friends than we do now. That's just a fact. And we've been tracing the decline of friendship now for decades. Today, if you ask the average American adult, 49% of adults in America report three or fewer closer friends. That's a problem because, again, we know this, to have the healthiest chance of a positive life, you need five in your inner circle. Might be one more, might be one less, but it's about five you need in your inner circle. So, ladies, if you're expecting your husband to provide all of your emotional needs, you are out of your mind. Like, that is never, guys, if you're expecting your wife to provide all of your emotional and social needs, it's not going to happen. We need a community of people around us. 49% say they have three or fewer friends. There's 12% who report, I don't have anyone. No one to call at 3 a.m. Car breaks down. I don't have someone that would come and get me. My house is on fire. I'm going to call 911, but I don't know where I'm going to stay that night. If you have one or two friends, you're actually in danger. There's certainly emotional danger. Those who are socially isolated experience more depression, more anxiety. And if you can't point to more than one close person in your life, you are in danger of suicidal ideation. It is a problem, a pandemic that we're experiencing in our nation. But it's not just a physical or an emotional problem, it's also a physical problem. Did you know that those who are socially isolated have a 20% chance higher of getting diabetes? 29% chance higher of a heart attack, 32% higher chance of a stroke, and this last one, this should stop you in your tracks. If you are isolated socially, you have a 40% higher chance of dementia. I mean, we have got to do something about this, and all of us feel it, don't you? We are more connected online and less connected in person. We're all bemoaning it. We're all complaining about it. We're all feeling it. So what are we going to do about it? Well, maybe we need to answer this question. Why has friendship been declining? Well, the answer is simple. Friendship comes with a cost. And we're not willing to pay the cost. Well, what's the cost of friendship? Well, you say, it takes a lot of time, and I don't have time. Would you just stop? I mean, in all Christian love, stop it. The average American spends 7 hours a day looking at a screen, not for work, TV, gaming, social media. No, we have the time, but we're not willing to give up that time. And here's why. This might surprise you. We prefer comfort over community. And let's face it, friends are uncomfortable. Because you got to make a plan and go out to eat. And I'm tired at the end of the day. I just want to Netflix and veg. Or maybe this, you got a friend and they start calling you on stuff and go, hey, are you sure that's the way you want to act? And you just go, I would rather be on social media right now. The inconvenience of friendship has pushed us into isolation. It's true, friendship has a cost. It is going to cost you time. It is probably going to cost you some finances, going out to eat, getting together, having a hobby. It's certainly going to cost you vulnerability. And I think that's where most of us are not willing to have a good, close friendship, to be vulnerable to. And friendship has a cost, but social isolation charges interest. It's compound interest year over year and decade after decade. The longer you live in isolation, the more danger you are in emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Look, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. I'm just setting us up so that we'll be willing to hear what God's word has to say about it. You know, God created you in community. The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit together in community made you for community, male, female, children, friends. And in the church, you realize the very genetics of the church, the structure of the church is an incubator for spiritual friendships. It's not about coming and hearing a message or standing and singing with other people anonymously. It is about not rows, but circles, face to face, and hip to hip serving. And if we're not willing to pay the price, we will be charged interest over the long haul of our life. So here's what I want to do. We're in the series of David, the most famous king of the Old Testament. And David had a famous friend, Jonathan. And I want to put David's relationship with Jonathan just as a kind of a backdrop to answer this simple question. What do I need to look for in a friend? If you're feeling the isolation, or maybe experiencing the emotional or physical consequences or spiritual consequences of your isolation, you may be comfortable, but it can't last without community. So what should we look for? There's three things from the life of David. I'm going to tell you those three things. And at the same time, I'm going to share with you personally, there are three friends in my life through three different seasons of my life that have helped me learn these three lessons. The first one is a friend sees you. I mean, the real you, the ugly crying you, that I'm under stress and I'm losing my mind you, the laughing until you cry you, they see you. But they don't just see like the exterior of it. They don't just see what's here today or maybe what you've revealed about your past. They see the potential you in the future because they see your dreams and the drives that God has put in your heart. So I want to show you what happened with David and Jonathan. In the book of 1 Samuel, we looked last week at that very famous story of David and Goliath. And shepherd boy comes and kills a giant. Cool story. If you weren't here, you'll want to catch up on demand and watch it. But here's this David, and that's the first time that Jonathan saw him in action. But we've seen Jonathan in action three chapters earlier. And I want to take you back for just a little bird's eye view. Imagine this, they're at war, and Saul, Jonathan's father, he's the king, is sitting under a pomegranate tree. Now, why the Bible chose to give us that detail, I don't know, but it's kind of interesting. He's in the shade, pomegranate tree, and they're at war. So why isn't he on the battle lines? Well, because he doesn't really want to fight and it could be dangerous, so they're just kind of waiting. Jonathan does not like waiting. So he wants the enemy to confront him. So he puts himself in a position to be confronted with the enemy. So here's the plateau, pomegranate tree, King Saul sitting, waiting. And Jonathan says to his armor bearer, dude, let's walk into the valley. Yeah, but there's like guerrilla warriors in the hills. I know. I want him to come out so I can fight him. Great idea. Let's go. So they go into the valley, and that's the dumbest place to be in a battle because everyone can come down on you, right? So it didn't take long, and some Philistines from one of the high places above them said, hey, the rats came out of their holes. And Jonathan says to his armor bearer, let's see what they say. If they tell us to come up and fight them, then we'll fight them up there. If they say, stay where you are, we're going to come down and fight you, then we'll stay here. Either way, they're in an unenviable position. And the Philistines said, hey, why don't you guys come up here and fight us? So they do. They start climbing. And the Bible gives this very specific detail. They climbed with their hands and their feet. They're rock climbing to get up into a bar fight. That's not wise. And it says that Jonathan's armor bearer was behind him. That's not where the armor bearer is supposed to be. But he's rock climbing up, and the disadvantage is as soon as they get to the edge, it's a cliff. All they got to do is kick him off. Except Jonathan, he's hard to get off of a cliff. So he gets up, armor bearer comes up, and before you know it, 30 or 20 Philistines are dead on the ground around them. And the other Philistines, let's just say they noticed. And they start to run. Meanwhile, back at the pomegranate tree, King Saul is sipping on a lemonade, whatever they were drinking back then. They're probably pomegranate juice now that I think about it. And he says, the enemy's running. Who's chasing them? So they did a head count, and they said, well, Jonathan is missing. Oh, well, that explains it. And so the whole army starts pursuing the Philistines. They had a fantastic victory that day. So why am I telling the story? Because I want you to hear what Jonathan said in the middle of the valley. Here are his words. Here is his heart. Perhaps the Lord will act. Well, maybe he will, maybe he won't. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving. If you just look at his actions, going into a valley, climbing up a cliff, fighting at great odds, it's foolish. If you look at the enemy, it's foolish. But if you look at God, it's faithful. He knew his God would come through. Okay, fast forward to last week's lesson. We're now in chapter 17, David and Goliath, big guy, small guy, shepherd, stone. And David, after Goliath insults him, David goes on a rant. The whole thing's worth reading, but I'm just going to share with you the simple passage of what David said. And I'm going to put it next to what Jonathan said and see if you can figure out why they were such good friends. David said, it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. And Jonathan said, perhaps the Lord will act. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving. David and Jonathan were two peas in a pod. They both had outrageous faith because instead of looking at the enemy, they were looking at their God. And I wonder if Jonathan on the sidelines, those days when Goliath kept coming out day after day and taunting the armies, Jonathan was as paralyzed as anyone else. And here comes a shepherd boy and says, that giant, he's nothing compared to God. Let's go. And Jonathan, in the very next chapter, this is what Jonathan says about David. Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. Because they had the same dreams, and they had the same visions, the same passion got their blood boiling. The same visions got them up at night. I've got a guy like that in my ministry here. His name is Larry. Now, Larry is actually one of the founding members of CCV. He's been around here a long time. And he's been on staff and done multiple things. When I came on staff, he could have been like Jonathan, said, I don't need to worry about the shepherd boy. I'm the king's son. He could have tapped into his heritage, but he embraced me because Larry and I share the same passions and visions. We love this church. We love what God is doing here. We also love global missions. And so Larry and I have traveled around the world together. We have hiked mountains together. We've been in valleys together, both literally and metaphorically. We share meals with our wives together. He has adopted me into his extended family. We are one in spirit, brothers, because of this shared love we have to make Jesus famous. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that I would not have the success here or the longevity here at CCV were it not for a man who prioritized my success even over his own. Imagine Jonathan. I mean, he's the king's son. He is actually giving priority to David over himself. Do you have a friend that would do that for you? Do you have a friend who would sacrifice their own interest and advancement for yours? See, Jonathan, he loved the kingdom of God, not the throne of his father. It wasn't about sitting on a throne and having power and making himself great. It was about expanding in the eyes of the world, the God of Israel. And because David was a partner in that, it didn't matter who was in front, who was in back, side to side, front to back. It didn't matter for David or Jonathan. Do you have a friend like that who will prioritize you even over themselves? Maybe you're asking, I don't, but how do I get a friend like that? That's the wrong question. The question is how you become a friend like that. The goal of a good friend is not to be valued, but to be valuable. Who are you prioritizing so that their greatest gifts and passions can be magnified so that the Lord that both of you are serving is glorified? That's the first thing to look out for. Who sees you? The second thing is a friend pays the price. It is costly to have a friendship like that. It costs you time. It costs you attention. It costs you vulnerability. Friendships just, they're costly. Of course, isolation will make you bankrupt, but friendship is costly. Are you willing to, do you have a friend who would sacrifice for you? In two verses after it says Jonathan, David became one in heart. He loved him. It says this, and Jonathan made a covenant with David. That's odd language for friendship. We usually think of that like in a marriage, but how do you make a covenant with a friend? Here's how. Because he loved him as himself, Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. If you were to go back in time and watch this, you would see immediately what's happening. Jonathan makes a covenant by taking his robe. He was the king's son. He was the heir apparent, the prince of Israel. He took off his royal robe and put it on a shepherd boy. And everyone went, what? He's willing for David to sit on the throne because he doesn't care about a throne. He cares about a kingdom. And whoever's going to push the kingdom farther, that's who should sit on the throne. But he didn't just put his robe on him. He also put his tunic on him. Now, the robe was the outer garment. That's what everybody saw. The tunic was the inner garment. That's what's next to your skin. And rich people had nicer clothes. They had nicer undergarments. They were smoother, softer. Jonathan isn't just giving David the outward that everyone can see. He's giving him what is deepest, most personal to him for his comfort. Sometimes we're willing to give what other people can see, but we're not willing to give what's most personal to us. So he's giving David what is his profession by giving him his tunic or his robe, and then he's giving him the personal gift of comfort and himself. He's giving himself, but he's also giving him, if you notice in the text, his sword, his bow, his belt. That's his power. He is offering to David his profession, his person, and his power. Do you have a friend like that? Or maybe I should ask, are you a friend like that? Is there anybody in your life that you think, you know what, if I were to sacrifice for them, the gospel would go farther. God would be more glorified. That's the kind of friend that we're calling you to be. And so it doesn't just cost you like your tunic and your cloak. It will have financial costs. It will have time costs. But I think the hardest thing, and maybe this is more true for men, I don't know. But the hardest thing to give to a friend is truth, honesty. Where you will tell them what they need to hear, not just what they want to hear. In my previous life, I was a Bible college professor, 22 years at Ozark Christian College, and the first time I wanted to write a book for my Life at Christ class, and there was a little publisher in town, it was a small publisher, and the president of that was named Chris Duell. So I invited him out to lunch. I gave him the proposal for this book, and to my delight and amazement, he actually said, yes, we'll publish that. So we started working together, and it didn't take long for Chris and I to realize we are one heart and one mind. And we started doing life together. I actually talked him out of being the publisher, and he became a professor with me at Ozark, and together we did a lot of life, a lot of life, a lot of lunches, a lot of trips overseas, a lot of classes we co-taught together. But I'll never forget one lunch. It was a little Thai restaurant on 7th Street in Joplin. The server was a lovely young woman, and I was being my delightful self with her. And after she walked away, he said, I thought you were going to ask her out on a date. I said, what? You were flirting with her. I said, I was not. He goes, Mark, you were flirting with her. He was willing to tell me the difficult truth. It was embarrassing for me to even tell you that today, but here's what happened. I went to the Lord with it afterwards. I said, is this true? And he said, it is. You made a vow to your bride in 1984, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, forsaking all others. I had forsaken all others with my hands, but not necessarily with my eyes, and not necessarily with my heart. And because of what Chris confronted me with, I made a vow that day that I would be true to my wife, body, soul, and spirit, with my words, with my hands, with my heart, until death do us part. Do you realize what a high price pastors pay? I mean, all of us would pay this for being unfaithful. But just last week, I had another pastor friend. He's out of ministry because he gave his heart to another woman. Chris saved me from unimaginable pain and loss because he was honest with me in the moment. The book of Proverbs says that wounds of a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Are you willing to tell your friend the hard truth? Some of you have a friend right now, and you're thinking of this friend right now, and you need to say to them, you know what? You're not being loyal to your wife. You know what? The way you're parenting is not healthy for you or your kids. You need to say to your friends, some of you, I haven't seen you in church for a long time, and you say you're a Christian, but you're not living like it. Some of you need to say, hey, I'm glad your business is doing well, but I'm not sure that it's good for you, because the way you're spending money and the way you're earning money is not honoring to God. Are you willing to be a friend like that? Because you'll likely never have a friend like that if you don't become a friend like that. And that leads us to the third thing, this third observation about friendship. A friend fosters your faith. You know, Jonathan and David did a lot of life together. But David also was in danger because of Saul. Jonathan's father looked at David's success and saw a threat. Jonathan looked at David's success and saw an opportunity to partner with him in life and in ministry. And here they are. Because of Saul's jealousy of David, he threw a spear at him, not once, twice. And actually, when Jonathan defended David later, Saul threw a spear at his own son. This is like a next level crazy. So David is on the run, and he goes to a little out of the way place called Horesh. It's a hole in the wall. Saul is trying to find him. David does. And here's what happened when Jonathan finds David. It says, Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. I had a friend like that in my very first ministry. His name is Doug, and I was 23 years old, pastor of a small church in San Antonio, South Side, rough area, and I was out of my depth. I didn't know what I was doing. But this friend on the north side, Doug, he would come and have lunch with me. He was a few years ahead of me, light years ahead of me in spirituality, and He and I just did life together. And I would come to lunch, and sometimes I'd say, you're never going to believe the decision that these elders made, and it's stupid. And he would go, Mark, those are God's men. He put them as leaders of the church. And you may not like what they said, but you need to submit to them. And when someone would criticize me, I know, imagine that. And they would say nasty things about me, and I would go to Doug and complain. And he goes, Mark, do you realize that it's only because they're hurt that they're saying that? And you know that Jesus had the same thing happen to him. Are you saying you don't deserve what Jesus went through? And he kept pointing me back to Jesus. He kept pointing me back to the Lord who loves me. And because of Doug, just, man, he kept pointing me back to God. And because of that, I was able to sustain that ministry and am in ministry today, in no small part because of Doug. And I think about the life of David. He made three tragic mistakes over his lifetime. One was with Bathsheba. You probably heard that story. Adultery. He also was the terrible father. He neglected his boys, and that cost him the kingdom after he died. He also counted his troops out of his own pride and self-sufficiency. That was a mistake that cost the entire nation. All three of David's major mistakes came after the death of Jonathan. He had other advisors, he had other friends, but he didn't have a friend that would tell him the hard truths. He didn't have a friend that kept pointing him back to God like he had in Jonathan. And it's interesting to me, Jonathan, I think, is actually a foreshadowing of the friendship with Jesus. Maybe you remember this. The night before Jesus died, he said this, greater love has no one than this, than he lay down his life for one's friends. Jesus was a prince in heaven and came to earth to serve us. Just like Jonathan was a prince in Saul's household, but laid it down to serve and promote David. And because of what Jonathan did, that sacrificial life, David became a king that no one else has rivaled except this King Jesus. And so, do you have a friend who keeps pointing you back to Jesus? Look, we're living in a friendship recession. There's no doubt about that. The question is, what are you going to do about it? And here at CCV, I hope you know this by now, we're not just going to call you to take a next step. We are going to make a system that helps you take that next step. And the system that we have, the incubator we have for godly friendships pointing you back to Jesus is groups. Now, you might be able to find godly friends outside of a CCV group, and if you can, go for it. But we want to make this as easy as possible for you to have the greatest possible opportunity to join a group. Is it going to cost you? Yes, it will. It's going to cost you a couple hours a week. It's going to cost you vulnerability. It's going to cost you the awkwardness of walking into someone else's home in the potential that there's going to be weirdos in there. And I'm just going to tell you now, there will be. I have been a part of four different groups in my season at CCB. All of them have been normal people just getting together. Are there awkward situations? Yes. Are there problematic people? Yes. Is it uncomfortable? Yes. I wouldn't do without it. Because part of being a man, part of being an adult, is being able to be uncomfortable for the benefit of you and the benefit of other people. Your best chance to find people who will point you back to Jesus is in a group. Now, I want to remind you that our word for the year, if you're new, maybe you've not heard it yet, our word for the year is resolve. And many of you had these ideas at the beginning of the year. This is the kind of person I'm going to be. Someday I'm going to join a group because I know I should. You resolve to do it, but you use the word resolve as a verb, not a noun. It's time to put a noun to it. It's not just what you say you're going to do. It's not what you imagine or dream, you intend to do. No, you put your resolve in place as a noun, and you have the grit to do what you know that God is calling you to do. If you have not joined a group yet, you are in danger emotionally, physically, and most of all, spiritually. God wants us to have this experience of doing life together, and that's what we want for you. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to watch a video so that you can feel like, what is it like for normal people to be part of a group? And then afterwards, the on every campus, your host is going to come out and give you the strategy of how to do that with the least barriers and obstacles. So I'm going to ask you, after this video, don't walk out. We want you to actually hear how easy it is to find an incubator for the friend that you're looking for.